however, can be hard to find. A spouse may unexpectedly file for divorce. A friend may stop calling or move away to another state. Even our bank may choose to close up their local branch and move all their services online. We all want a partner who'll stay with us through every stage. But does such a partner really exist? A partner who will be with us through all circumstances of life? Well, in today's passage, we see that Joseph has such a partner. A partner who is with him through every stage. Last time we heard from Joseph in Genesis, he was on his way to Egypt in chains. You may recall back in Genesis 37 how Joseph's own brothers had become jealous of him. In fact, they hated him so much that they trapped him and sold him to slave traders. Now, Genesis 39 picks up the story directly after Joseph arrives in Egypt, where he's sold to an Egyptian named Potiphar. Now, this Potiphar is no pleb. He's part of the ruling class, an officer of Pharaoh himself. And as captain of the guard, Potiphar would have been responsible for guarding and overseeing Pharaoh's prisoners. And the fact that Joseph lands a position with Potiphar is no happenstance. It's another example of divine providence at work in the life of Joseph. But that's our next sermon. For now, I want you to try and put yourself in Joseph's sandals. Imagine what he must be feeling right now. I reckon he must be feeling pretty alone and afraid. But as we read on, one thing becomes clear. Joseph isn't alone. Looking again at verse 2, what does it say? The Lord was with Joseph, and he became a successful man, and he was in the house of his Egyptian master. His master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord caused all that he did to succeed. Now, Potiphar couldn't help but notice there was something different about Joseph. It seemed like everything this young Hebrew touched turned to gold. And as a result, Potiphar quickly promoted Joseph, making him the chief steward of his household. Quite the promotion for a young Hebrew slave who didn't have much of a resume to start with. We're told in verse 6 that Potiphar eventually entrusted Joseph with running just about everything in his household. So Potiphar left all that he had in Joseph's charge. And because of him, Potiphar had no concern about anything but the food he ate. Now, interestingly, we're never told whether Joseph was a good worker or not. Well, we can assume he was. What the text makes explicitly clear is that Joseph's meteoric rise was primarily due to God. His work ethic is not even mentioned. We see that in verse 3. The Lord caused all that Joseph did to succeed in his hands. Now, why does God take such a hands-on approach with Joseph? Why does God ensure everything this young man touches turns to gold? Well, because God is a promise-keeping God. See, the reason God remains loyal to Joseph and chooses to bless him is because God made a promise to Joseph's ancestors, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He promised that he would bless this family. God initiated this covenantal relationship with Joseph's great-grandfather, Abraham, all the way back in Genesis 12. There God said to Abraham, "Go from your country and your kindred and your father's household to the land that I will show you, and I will make of you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great so that you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and him who dishonors you I will curse, and in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed." God reiterates these promises to Joseph's grandfather Isaac and to his father Jacob at various times throughout the book of Genesis. And clearly, this same promise extends to Joseph as well. God's covenant is also the reason why Potiphar's household experiences such blessing. By blessing Potiphar for Joseph's sake, God is simply fulfilling his promise to Abraham. I will bless those who bless you, and him who dishonors you I will curse. While Joseph may have been a hard worker and a trustworthy guy, his work ethic wasn't the reason God blessed him. No, God blesses Joseph because God is a promise-keeping God. A God who keeps his word. A God who stays with his people through all stages. Now, like Joseph, some of us here this morning may experience times of great success and prosperity during our lives. We may get a promotion at work, for instance, or make some lucrative investments while we're young. We may even garner a good reputation within our field or gain a degree of worldly influence over others. If we're fortunate enough to experience success in this life, we must be quick to recognize such success is never due to the work of our hands alone. All success is ultimately due to God's gracious hand at work in our lives. We can't claim it. The Apostle James teaches us that every good and perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shadow due to change. If we are successful in worldly terms, and we may not be, but if we are successful in worldly terms, it's ultimately because of God's blessing. He is the one who blesses our work. We are the beneficiaries of his kindness. Now, remembering this is really important because it'll keep you humble in times of prosperity and grateful in the midst of worldly success. But we also must be on our guard during times of blessing, because great blessing can often result in great testing. Success can bring with it new temptations. And you'll notice this is exactly what Joseph experiences. It turns out that God not only blesses Joseph with power and influence, but he's blessed this young man in the looks department as well. In verse 6, we're told that he is handsome in form and appearance. And as a result, handsome Joseph pretty quickly garners the attention of his master's wife, who makes him a proposition many men would struggle to refuse. Lie with me, she says. To make matters more difficult for handsome Joseph, she speaks this way day after day, we're told. She is relentless in her pursuit of him. Now, try and put yourself in Joseph's sandals again. Life hasn't exactly been easy for you as of late. You're in a distant land, far from home. You're probably feeling a bit lonely. All of a sudden, a beautiful woman starts giving you attention. She tells you you're attractive. More than that, she offers you comfort and a warm bed. Now, most of us would expect a young man in Joseph's situation would be okay to take a few liberties. But Joseph isn't. He flat out refuses. Why? Well, listen to his response in verse 8. He says, "Behold, because of me, my master has no concern about anything in this house. And he has put everything that he has in my charge. He is not greater in this house than I am, nor has he kept anything from me except you, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" I find Joseph's response surprising. I kind of anticipated Joseph would say something like, "How can I do this great wickedness and sin against my master Potiphar? This woman is Potiphar's wife after all, and by committing adultery with her, he'd be sinning against his master. So why then does Joseph say, 'How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?'" Well, it's because Joseph understands what sin is. All sin is an act of rebellion against God. This means every sinful action, even if it is perpetrated against another image bearer, is an act of rebellion against God, who tells us to love our neighbors and gives us clear commands as to how to do it. A man who understood this was King David. Directly after the prophet Nathan first exposed his sin, David made a heartfelt confession in Psalm 51. He prays there, "Against you and you alone, God, have I sinned and done what is evil in your sight." Now, those of you familiar with the background to Psalm 51 would know that David not only sinned against God in that situation, he had obviously sinned against his friend Uriah, firstly by sleeping with his wife Bathsheba and then by arranging his murder. Nevertheless, David still says to God, "Against you and you alone have I sinned." Why? Well, David understands what Joseph clearly understood. When you sin against your neighbor, you are sinning against the God who commands you to love your neighbor. Ultimately, this is why Joseph refuses to give in to the advances of Potiphar's wife. He knew that God would be implicated in his sin. And so he refuses. Now, we might marvel at Joseph's apparent willpower, but I'm going to suggest it wasn't his willpower which kept him from sinning with Potiphar's wife. It was his view of God. Joseph's view of God wasn't diminished or deficient. He knew God was holy. He knew God was all-knowing and that nothing could be hidden from his sight. He also knew that God would be deeply grieved by his sin. And because he feared God, he couldn't bring himself to do it. In truth, willpower alone cannot keep you from giving into sin and temptation. It can help, but it won't be enough. Only a proper view of God, his holiness, his greatness, his love, will be able to do that. This is why Joseph wouldn't give in. This is why he fled. He feared God and put God above everything. Sadly, this is where things take a turn for the worse for Joseph. See, Potiphar's wife becomes vindictive and falsely accuses him of assaulting her. And did you happen to notice the evidence she produces? A coat. This is actually the second instance in Joseph's life when someone has used his cloak in order to deceive others. Now she says to her husband in verse 17, "The Hebrew servant whom you have brought among us came in to me to laugh at me, but as soon as I lifted up my voice and cried, he left his garment beside me and fled out of the house." Naturally, Potiphar isn't too happy with all of this. So he strips Joseph of his position and he sends him to prison, to the place where the king's prisoners were confined. Now imagine what it must be like to be Joseph at this point. You've literally done everything right. You've been a faithful worker, a man of integrity. More than that, you've been obedient to God by fleeing from temptation. Tick, tick, tick. You've done the right thing. And what have you got in return? Suffering. As a slave, Joseph would have been absolutely powerless in this situation. With no grounds for appeal and no way to escape, Joseph was stuck. The poor guy was suffering not for doing anything wrong, but for doing everything right. Maybe you can relate to Joseph's mistreatment. But while Joseph sat in prison suffering for a crime he didn't commit, he made an incredible discovery. He wasn't alone. A reading from verse 21. While in prison, it says, the Lord was with Joseph and showed him steadfast love and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison put Joseph in charge of all the prisoners who were in the prison. Whatever was done there, he was the one who did it. The keeper of the prison paid no attention to anything that was in Joseph's charge because the Lord was with him. And whatever he did, the Lord made it succeed. There's been a massive change in Joseph's circumstances from the beginning of Genesis 39 to the end of it. Joseph has gone from prosperity to adversity, from blessing to suffering, from Potiphar's house to a prison cell. And yet, God has been with Joseph the entire time. God has been his partner through every stage. Nevertheless, Joseph's example does teach us a sobering truth. Just because God is present with us doesn't mean life will be easy for us. Like Joseph, we may be falsely accused of crimes we didn't commit. We may suffer reputational damage due to outrageous lies. We may even be sent to prison not for wrongdoing, but for obeying God. In truth, God never promises believers will be rewarded by the world for being righteous. Neither does he promise to remove difficulty, adversity, and suffering from each of our lives. Nevertheless, we can be assured that in times of suffering, God is not distant from us. Indeed, God has experienced it from the inside. After all, God himself suffered this kind of treatment when he came to dwell among us in the person of Jesus Christ. The Apostle Peter tells us that Jesus Christ suffered unjustly, leaving us an example we can imitate. Reading from 1 Peter 2, verse 21 through 23. For to this you have been called, because Christ also suffered for you, leaving you an example, so that you might follow in his steps. He committed no sin, neither was deceit found in his mouth. When he was reviled, he did not revile in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten, but continued entrusting himself to him who judges justly. Like Joseph, Jesus Christ was sinless, and yet he suffered anyway. Like Joseph, Jesus didn't retaliate or demand vindication. Instead, he continued entrusting himself to the God who judges justly. God doesn't promise to to remove difficulty, adversity, and suffering from each of our lives. He will, however, be with you, blessing you in unexpected ways. He will be your partner through every stage, in times of blessing, testing, and especially in times of suffering. The author of our closing hymn understood this truth for himself. O Love That Will Not Let Me Go was written by the Scottish hymn writer and pastor George Matheson. Now, tradition holds that Matheson wrote the words to this famous hymn after his fiancée broke off their engagement. Despite the pain which he clearly felt, Matheson had hope. He knew he wasn't alone, for there was a love which would be with him always. A partner who would never let him go. And this is the same assurance Joseph had, whether he was in Potiphar's house or in prison. And it's the same assurance you can have as well through every stage of life. Amen. Well, we're going to close today's service.